Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. Dr. Mohler is president of the Southern Baptist Theological Seminary and one of the nation's leading theologians and cultural commentators. To get online with Dr. Mohler, call toll-free nationwide, 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Now, here's your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Hello, America. Welcome to the Albert Mohler Program. Since when did our children become such indoor creatures? Isn't that a fascinating question? You compare childhood now, or adolescence now, to what it meant to be a young person or a child just a few years ago. And here's the big difference. They are inside creatures. The interior space is their home. That's where they're comfortable. Kids find themselves rarely outdoors these days. They don't know much about nature. They don't know much about what it means just to poke around outdoors. They don't know what it means in many ways to play outdoors. Playgrounds are becoming increasingly quiet, and the woods are increasingly free of children. For a number of reasons, this has happened. But, you know, many contemporary children and teenagers know everything about Facebook and nothing about fishing. They know exactly how to experience digital media, but they don't know what it's like to be out there, you know, pitching a tent in the wilderness. Or just understanding what it is even to know, in many ways, their own backyard. Richard Liu's written a fascinating book entitled Last Child in the Woods. And sometime back, I had a conversation with him. And with summer beginning, I thought, you know, it's a good time for us to go back to that conversation and be reminded of why we as parents need to get our kids outdoors. There's something wrong, from a Christian perspective, something uniquely wrong about children becoming, well, self-imprisoned interior people, rather than people who know what it's like to go outside and be comfortable outside and play outside and explore outside and come to understand what God has given us in this incredible world of such diversity and such beauty. You don't want your child to be the last child in the woods. And you're going to look forward to this conversation with Richard Liu. And I think you'll also want to look to the website where today I post not only some information about this book, but also about my article on this that I wrote some time back. I think is still very current in terms of kids, and especially with summer beginning. Let's not let our children experience the summer primarily from indoors. Let's look at some other issues that are going on in the news. U.S. News and World Report is reporting about parents who are struggling with retirement savings precisely because they're having to spend so much in this economic situation on their children, and not just their children who are minors, but they're children who are adults. What we are looking at right now in this society is a reshaping, a restructuring of the relationship between parents and children. And one of the things we're going to have to watch and about which Christians should be concerned is that it's becoming more and more difficult to launch children into adulthood, far more difficult to launch young adults into full, mature, responsible, fully capable adulthood. And it's going to come with consequences. One of the consequences that is going to happen as you look to the future is that many of these parents who are right now not putting their money into retirement accounts, but rather into their adult children, is that they're going to have some real struggles when the time comes for their own retirement. Diane Young, director of retirement goal planning for TD Ameritrade, says, for many parents, the day-to-day expenses of children make it almost impossible to steer clear of debt altogether. So you also have parents not just deferring the kind of investment they ought to make in their retirement, they are also, in this case, taking on debt that, especially looking to the future, could be very problematic. It's just a reminder to us that one of our Christian responsibilities, not just to parents and not just to young adults, but together for all of us, is to figure out what we're doing wrong as a society and making it so difficult for young adults to launch. And then doing everything within our power as Christians, not just as parents, but certainly they're on the front line, but frankly as churches, to help young adults get launched, to help them get healthily and wholly married, help them to find their way, not just into a job, but into a calling, and find their way into the full deployment for the gospel of Jesus Christ and the glory of God in service to the local church as well. So this is just one of those reminders. And U.S. News and World Report's coming out with a warning that parents, they're not putting enough into retirement because they're taking care of their adult children. Well, it's just another reminder of the failure to launch syndrome and its consequences. Folks, every once in a while you see a story and you look at it and you say, you know, that really tells us a great deal. And sometimes there's even just a line, just one sentence in a news story that distills something important about the culture and where we are, and we ought to notice it. Let me give you this particular sentence. The sentence is by Susie Orbach. It was published in The Guardian, which is a British newspaper, but this is not just about Britain. This has everything to do with American culture as well. Here's the sentence. Men's magazines today resemble Cosmopolitan of 20 years ago. What in the world is she talking about? She's talking about body image. Now, here's the deal. We know that women have been suffering from an imbalanced and prejudiced and wrongheaded understanding of body image. We have young women who go into eating disorders and starve themselves and do all kinds of things because the picture of beauty that has been enforced upon them is one of incredible, for lack of a better word, skinniness and thinness. It's an abnormal thing that most women cannot live up to or can only live up to at great expense to their personal health or to the risk of their narcissism in thinking that body image is so important. That's the most important issue of their lives. And they're simply going to give themselves to that rather than to other things that should be of greater importance. But it's not now just women and not just young women in particular. It's also young men. And one of the pieces of evidence for this is what has happened to advertising and mannequins, male mannequins. Now, most of you listening to this program today probably have never thought about mannequins being of significant moral importance, but they are. And they are for this reason. The mannequins on display in stores present a picture of the ideal that those who are buying these clothes are supposedly seeking. You know, one of the ways they sell these clothes is by putting them on mannequins so that people, and generally these have been women, look at that and say, if I buy that item, I will look like that. This is my way to approximate that. But now, and this is very revealing, it's not just girls and young women, for that matter, older women, it's boys and young men as well. The documentation is very clear that some of the male mannequins for adult males, especially for young men, now have waists that are only 27 inches. Now, folks, that's not normal. And what we have here is kind of the Twiggy syndrome, not for women, but for young men. I think Susie Orbach's onto something of importance here. This is moving in the wrong direction. And in particular, one maker of these shop mannequins has shaved down the bodies that go into shop windows into sleeker and sleeker sculptures, so slimmed down, get this, so slimmed down that the actual clothes that are being displayed on the mannequins have to be pinned in order for them to stay on the mannequin. Now, this is something that's very revealing. Let me tell you what it reveals. It reveals the fact that one of the things that this society has done, bizarrely enough, is to turn young men into persons, beings who are as fashion conscious and body image conscious as so many young women. And what we did to women, we are now doing to young men. Susie Orbach writes this, saying, it's working. Boys, young men, men of all ages are being captivated by the new visual grammar, which pushes men to pout and posture. The more it is there and the more we succumb, the larger will men's girths become and the bigger the profits of those companies preying on transforming men's bodies. Don't do it, guys. Reject this new uniformity. Dare to be as physically robust and varied as you always were. Don't fall into being the latest bait in the breeding of body insecurity. And all I can say to that particular argument is yes. And from a Christian perspective, it's even more important than that. Because this idea of what she calls body uniformity, well, it's just not the way God made us. It's just not the way it is. And you know, one of the things we have done in terms of men in this society is that we have transformed health into a new form of idolatry, and that health comes with a particular body image, and it is affecting so many things. It used to be that if you went to the beach, young men and boys were pretty comfortable with their, you know, just shirts off out in the surf. Nowadays, you find boys, even where there are only boys present, that, you know, where it's in settings of Boy Scouts and other things, where they simply want to wear as much clothing as they can because they know they don't meet this new ideal of male attractiveness. They are affected by this same body insecurity. You know, let's name this for what it is. Whether it's male or female, these are young men and young women, boys and girls, women and men, who are victimized by this kind of societal pressure. But let's not leave it at victimization. There's a certain narcissism here. Folks, Christians had better be the people who know we do not find our satisfaction, our self-esteem, not to mention our sanctification, in body image. It's found only in Christ. And Christ has redeemed us, fat and skinny, tall and short, blue-eyed, brown-eyed. What does the Bible say? From every tongue and tribe and people and nation? It's not about body image. And it's about time we learned that. It's something revealing that is migrated now from young women to young men and to mannequins that can't even keep the clothes on. Back to talk about how to get our children from indoors, outdoors, and why it matters. You're listening to the Albert Mueller Program.
Author Richard Louv argues that America's children are suffering from what he describes as nature deficit syndrome or nature deficit disorder. It's a significant problem, and I think he's onto something here, because America's children are playing indoors. They're disconnected from nature. They're playing with electronic gizmos, looking at electronic screens. They're held in by their parents, who are afraid something awful will happen to them outdoors. They've never met a snail. They've never picked up a cricket. They simply don't know what it's like outside, and their own backyard is a foreign territory to them. We're very glad to have Richard Louv with us on the program today. He's a futurist and a journalist. He's focused on family, nature, and community. His new book is entitled Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. Mr. Louv, welcome to the program.
Thank you for having me.
All right, we're very glad to have you. I have to tell you that I came to know of you, first of all, through your book America 2 over 20 years ago. So I've kind of been following what you've been writing, and when I saw your name and the title of this book, I just had to go get it. What are you really up to here?
Well, basically, this is something I think that many of us, and I know that I've read your commentary on the book, which I've greatly appreciated on the Internet. I think many of us have had this in the back of our mind, that something very fundamental has changed in the relationship between the young and nature, and that this has really profound implications for the health of our children, for their physical health, their mental health, even their spiritual health, and in fact, the health of the earth itself.
Mr. Louv, you really talk about this nature deficit disorder, first of all, in fairly poetic terms, and almost romanticizing your own boyhood, and I can connect to that. We're probably about the same age. I experienced much of the same. I have a 13-year-old son, and he doesn't have the same contact with the outside world I did. I grew up where I could just run out with my friends out into the woods. At least we called it the woods. It was really kind of an abandoned lot that had grown up. And, that poetic start really gives me a sense almost of a tragic loss of something here. But then you get to something beyond the poetry, and that is an actual argument that this nature deficit disorder may explain some of what is now diagnosed as AHAD and the fact that many kids, especially young boys, can't connect. You know, that I thought was a really interesting part of your book. How did you come up with that?
Well, there's a lot of new research that's just emerged in the last several years. This has not been studied very much. But, for instance, very good research at the University of Illinois has looked at kids with the symptoms of attention deficit disorder and found that any kind of direct contact with nature play reduces those symptoms, improves their lives. And the authors of that research at the University of Illinois argue that nature therapy should be added to the traditional therapies of Ritalin and other stimulants and behavioral modification as a third therapy. And while I agree with that, I turn that around a bit in the book and suggest that just maybe the incredible rise in the number of kids with the symptoms of attention deficit may have something to do with the fact that we've taken nature away from them in the first place.
Well, I think you make a very compelling point there. And, until I was really pondering your book, I hadn't thought anecdotally of some of what I've observed myself. And by the way, I love the quote from I think it's an 11-year-old boy that you put in here from San Diego, in which he said, "I like to play indoors better because that's where all the electrical outlets are." You know, we really have trained our children to have kind of an artificial form of fun, an electronic form of fun, rather than engaging the real world, haven't we?
Yes, we have, and that's been because of a lot of factors, most importantly because of our fear as parents of stranger danger. When you look at the statistics, though, the number of abductions of children has actually been on the decline for the last decade. A new report by Duke University shows that kids are safer now than at any time since 1975. What has increased is the amount of coverage that CNN and Fox and the rest of them give to a handful of very tragic abductions, and they play them over and over and over in an endless loop until we believe that there are thousands of these things happening, and that there's an abductor at every corner. And this is profoundly changing the nature of our lives. It's putting our kids under house arrest.
Well, that's an interesting way to put it. Let me also come back to something that that you said that really also connects with what I observe in, among churches, among families, and among all those that work with children and youth. You talk about the fact that, that some time ago, summer camp was a place where you camped, hiked in the woods, learned about plants and animals, or told firelight stories about ghosts or mountain lions. You go on to say, as likely as not today, summer camp is a weight loss camp or a computer camp. In other words, everything has to be organized and orchestrated and, for that matter, closely supervised by adults.
And there's this great feel of fear of lawsuits out there, too. The Girl Scout camp can no longer climb trees because of that fear of lawsuits. As you know from reading the book, half of the book is focused on positive things that folks can do, either in their own family, but also schools and the Boy Scouts and the Girl Scouts, the institutions that traditionally have cared about these things, conservation organizations. There's a lot we can do, and it is certainly, I've learned even more since I went on the book tour and since the book was published, I believe even more that there's great hope that we really can turn this around. And the first step is just to recognize this great change. And there's a lot of good news, because this new research, this body of evidence that's emerging, is something that every parent and every educator ought to know about, and they don't know about it, about just how great nature is for kids, for their development, for their psychological health, their physical health, you know, in terms of obesity, many of the issues that we talk about, their stress with kids. A little bit of nature can go a long way, and the public generally does not know about that, and I hope that this book communicates that.
Well, I think it does. In fact, I like so many of the metaphors you use or imply, such as the fact that nature could be its own form of Ritalin. You know, instead of putting these kids on Ritalin and drugs, they may actually find many of their problems and patterns resolved by the kind of natural play that takes place. And I think one of the key points that really spoke to me here was that these kids need time to imagine, to fantasize, to play in unsupervised ways, where it's not so much just a game, they're just out in the woods. And, you know, if they want to build a fort or dam up a creek or, you know, whatever else, there's just something very, very important that takes place there. Mr. Louv, you know, I think a lot of parents are looking right now at their kids across the room playing, a video game or watching a DVD. What would you say to encourage them to kick the kids outside?
Well, first, I don't pretend that we're going to go back to the 1950s. That fear is real, even if some of the reasons for it are not. One thing we're going to have to do is we're going to have to be more intentional. It's not just a matter of saying go outside and play anymore. We may have to go outside with them in nature because of that fear, and so I encourage that. Part of the good news here is that this is not a bitter pill. Parents and adults, grandparents are a great resource for this. The institutions like churches and places of worship and schools, etc. Any adults who take kids into nature so that they can experience it, they get the same benefits that the kids do. The better attention span, the stress reduction, better physical health, all of those things that the kids get, so do the parents when they take them out into nature.
Very good word. That's from author Richard Louv. His book is entitled Last Child in the Woods, Saving Our Children from Nature Deficit Disorder. It was the subject of my commentary published yesterday at albertmuller.com. The book is available at your local bookstore or online services. I really want to commend it. I think you'll find it very, very interesting. Mr. Louv, it's been great to have you on the program. Thank you.
Well, thank you.
All right, folks, when we come back, I want you to talk about your own experiences and what you are doing as a family, as parents, to try to encourage your children and protect your children and teach your children as they engage nature. Maybe a new thought for a lot of us, but it's something we need to talk about. The phone number, 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK, coast to coast. This is the Albert Mueller Program. We'll be right back.
listening to the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter. To get online, call toll-free 1-877-893-TALK. That's 1-877-893-8255. Or go to www.albertmohler.com. Here again is your host, Dr. Albert Mohler.
Well, it's good to have author Richard Louv as our guest. His new book, Last Kid in the Woods, Last Child in the Woods, is really all about this nature deficit disorder he's talking about with so many kids that simply lack most contact with the outside world, with nature, with trees and rocks and creeks and all the rest. And, you know, I grew up in Florida. I grew up in a community, certainly when I was a younger boy, in which I could go outside. I could play in the neighborhood. And my parents weren't really living in fear of serial killers or kidnappers or all the rest. My buddies and I could go out at the end of the street and cross one ditch. And we were in what we called the woods. It was a fairly large tract of land, many acres, undeveloped. There were trees. There were sand dunes. There was a creek. It was just idyllic. And I realize that's a long way from the way my own son engages the outdoor world. This is a different generation. And of course, I think Mr. Louv is onto something. A lot of parents just live in fear. The fear that something will happen to their children outdoors. Organizations that used to take kids outdoors and help connect them with nature. Well, he points out they're afraid of litigation. The Girl Scouts won't even let girls climb trees. You know, there's just something especially, I think, wrong with the diagnosis of all these young boys with attention deficit hyperactivity disorder, AH8D, or whatever they want to call it most recently. And, you know, he really does cite some very compelling research indicating that young boys who have a considerable amount of time outdoors connecting with nature and doing the kind of things the boys do outside, they tend to do better in school. They have a greater attention span, ability to focus. The phone number is 877-893-8255, 877-893-TALK. I'd like to know how you're processing this, parent, family. You know, what are you doing about this? But first, I also want to tell you that we as Christians have an angle beyond this. We have a dimension of concern beyond nature deficit disorder. We believe that the entirety of the creation testifies of the glory of God. And thus, we honor God by receiving the gift he has given us in nature and enjoying it and teaching our children to enjoy it and to respect it. And that's an important thing for Christian parents to understand. Let's go to Rob calling from Akron, Ohio, listening on WHKW. Rob, it's great to have you. Go ahead.
Doctor, thank you. A couple of comments. Would love to hear your thoughts. First one on the attention deficit piece. I don't know if you have any experience here, but what I'm hearing more and more is we do need to protect our kids a little bit in that the images that are on television or video games are so fast that a developing mind, they just can't comprehend it like they can a book that is slower and they're going through and they're able to, as you said, imagine what's on the page versus see it happening in just microsecond images flying across the screen. That's kind of thought number one. Thought number two was you mentioned the word camping, and I tell you, I never thought our family in a million years would camp, but with a four-year-old and a two-year-old, we tried it a couple years ago. And I was just absolutely floored that our kids on a birthday, you know, they enjoy all the toys they get. But when we go out camping, my four-year-old son will see a stick or a gigantic tree. It'll keep him busy for 20 minutes. He'll figure out what he's going to do. He's going to build something. And you're right, the creativity just comes out. Lastly, just a comment on the spirituality part of it. Our priest a couple weeks ago made a weird comment, and it tied into what you're talking about today. He said that we feel that we need to raise our kids, that we need to keep something in front of them every minute. They need to be in front of the TV. They need to be doing this, that, or the other. He said, do we ever just stop and kind of relate to God or whatever, just kind of sit there and just think? I think he was talking more to adults than maybe kids, but do we ever just take a break? And that was kind of his sermon for that day. So love to hear your thoughts.
Yeah, Rob, I appreciate hearing from you. You actually shared a great deal there. And by the way, I appreciate your first person about your own family and your young children and family and camping. I think that'll speak to a lot of parents, and it'll encourage a lot of parents that this really can be done. You can survive and come home with your marriage intact and the kids having learned a lot. That's great. You know, I want to plug into what you said there at the last two. You know, the reality is that there's a considerable amount of silence necessary if we're really going to develop the disciplines of the Christian life. You know, you really can't do that very well if you keep piping into your ears and into your sensory perception, the visuals and all the rest, that which blocks out that still small voice. You know, just reading scripture. It's hard to do that, standing in the middle of traffic in Manhattan. It's also hard to do it sitting in front of a of a computer or a DVD screen or a television. Speaking of the television, you know, Rob, you raised a very good point. Do you know that there was an outbreak of epilepsy among young adolescent boys in Japan given one animated cartoon that had too many flashes of light? There's the visual stimulation. There are pediatricians who are worrying that this kind of visual stimulation across electronic screens can actually bring on something like an epileptic fit, an epileptic seizure. Well, even below that, there must be a problem of some sort. Folks, the phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. We're talking about nature deficit disorder, how to overcome it, and why we as Christians should be particularly concerned. I'm Albert Mohler. Welcome back, folks. You know, I've had a considerable response to my column published yesterday at albertmohler.com. I'm really using Mr. Louv's book as kind of a stepping-off place in order to talk about how we as Christians should understand that we don't worship nature, we don't even really romanticize nature, but we do understand that God has given us the created order in order to display His glory. It's for our benefit. He really intended for us to look upon the nature He's given us and to see in all of its wonders His own love for us. Now, there are those who worship nature. That's a big problem. That is antithetical to Christianity. We do not worship nature. We worship the creator of nature. But, you know, we really can't worship the God who created the world if we just ignore and neglect and despise what He's given us. Now, I think the language could be too strong here. I think most parents aren't in a position of saying, we don't want our kids to relate to nature. I think the reality is that we just realize now that we've got to use a lot of intentionality to make it happen. The society is kind of stacked against us in this. And tell me about your family, what you're doing, how you look at this whole picture. I know that some have already come to this conclusion, and I'm with Mr. Louv. I do see some hopeful signs. The phone number is 877-893-8255. That's 877-893-TALK. Give us a call. Let's go to Scott calling from Clearwater, Florida, listening on WTBN. Scott, it's your turn.
Hey, Dr. Mohler, thank you for taking my call. Great subject today. I think as long as it took us to get out of that, it's going to take us that long to get back to that. And I think we can look at our own childhoods and growing up in central Wisconsin with the seasons and the rivers and playing football and doing our own things. Those things need to be pulled from our memories, from our experience, and given and talk to our kids and express. We need to take the responsibility and initiative on those things. If they're so cherished memories, we need to give those to our kids and realize how important that is, connection to God and what He's made and incredible His deity in the world. It's missing. It's going to take that long to get back to where what we all cherish and remember.
Yeah, I guess, Scott, it's kind of like being reminded that all politics is local. All responses to something like this require, you know, the small steps. You know, it really is a local situation. I think, first of all, parents can all of a sudden wake up and say, you know, we really do need to spend more time outdoors. We really do need to do more. You know, my family this summer, we had some tremendous experiences. My son and I spent a lot of time fishing. And, you know, there's so much good in that because you have to sit and wait. And honestly, he was more interested in looking at the alligators in the Everglades than I think even the fish. But that's fine, too. I know we're all interested in looking at that. And there's good reason to keep your eye on them from time to time as well. I was a Boy Scout. Loved going out. That was my territory. Went out there. And, you know, it was unusual even then, back in the 1960s, you know, to go out and to be in that kind of place. But it wasn't unique. You could go out there. It was well understood. That was a part of childhood, of boyhood. And, you know, that's just a tremendous thing. And, my family and I went whitewater rafting on the Nantahala River this summer. Now that'll test your relationships right quick. And it's a survival thing. You got to get through this. You got to get down the falls. You got to all be in the boat and you got to have all your limbs still with you when you get there. It was tremendous. We still look at the photograph and just smile about it. It was tremendous fun. Let's go to Mark calling from Louisville, Kentucky. Mark, welcome.
Thank you, Dr. Mohler. I just want to call in and say that I totally agree with what you're saying about young boys and getting them out in the outdoors. I have two boys myself, and we love to go camping, fishing, and hunting. And I've never seen them more alive and relaxing and enjoying themselves than when we're out camping. They also, you know, it seems like they like to get away from their mother a little bit too. And I don't think that's a bad thing, totally. You know, it's kind of a male bonding type of thing. So I appreciate you bringing it up today.
Well, I appreciate your testimony. Mark, tell me, how old are your boys?
11 and 13.
All right. Now, I'm going to ask you, I'm going to put you on the spot here. Do they take their Game Boys when they go camping, or is this the kind of camping where it's just you, me, and nature?
You, me, and nature.
All right. I had a feeling that's the point you're going to make, Mark, and I appreciate it. You know, our kids have become so addicted to so many of these electronic games and gadgets and all the rest. They wouldn't know what to do if they actually got somewhere where they were going to have to create their own entertainment and their own visuals and their own audio, and maybe just have to listen to what a frog's going to say sitting on the creek bank. That would be a revolution. Mark, thank you so much for your call. Let's go to Steve calling from Charlie Boy, Michigan, listening on XM Satellite Radio. Go right ahead, Steve.
Good day, Mr. Mueller. It's great to hear your voice again, and I listen to you every day regularly. My comment is that my children, my oldest boy is 33 and my youngest boy is 27, were both born and raised here in the northern Michigan woods, and we enjoy hunting, fishing, camping, and all of the outdoors, and I just make the comment that children who are influenced by nature understand that the human race is not as superior as most of us think it might be, that the Creator is the superior being who gives us all these gifts.
Well, that's the point, isn't it? That, in fact, only a sovereign, wonderful, omniscient, omnipotent creator could have done this. You know, I appreciate your call, Steve. I was talking to a group of students just last night, and one of the points I was trying to make to them is that the Christian doctrine of creation is so much bigger in terms of its meaning and its scope than most Christians ever imagine. Here's the deal. The Bible tells us that the story of creation is a part of the story of redemption. In Romans chapter 8, Paul writes that the creation is groaning under the effects of sin. It is waiting for the revelation of the Son of God. It is anticipating its restoration and redemption. That's a very important issue here. God created this world, this entire universe, this cosmos, in order that he would save a people on this planet from their sins by the work of his Son, the Lord Jesus Christ. That's the purpose of all of this. And that is an audacious truth claim. Let's just recognize that. This Christian doctrine of creation is a huge truth claim. It transforms the way you look at everything. God cared so much for us that he sent his Son. That's the story of salvation, so that all who believe in him might have life and life everlasting. He gave his Son. But what Christ did on the cross was reflected even in creation. And creation is even now awaiting the redemption that is to come. That's why at the end of the book, we find the promise of a new heaven and a new earth. But God so loved us that he did this. And he so loved what he was going to do that he created a world of nearly infinite and immeasurable wonder to testify how important his work was going to be. Yes, you know, this puts us in our place. We're not the creator, we're the creature. But we're the only creature who knows the creator. We know what this is and what this world means, and we know who made it. I'll be back with some final thoughts in just a moment. We're talking about the last child in the woods, nature deficit disorder, and how we as Christians can respond. I'm Albert Mueller. Welcome back to the Albert Mueller Program. That's good stuff. You know, getting kids from the indoors, outdoors, especially in the summer, that's an important thing for parents to think about. And I want to mention one thing that that many parents are probably, especially moms, might be thinking right now, and that is the outdoors is a dangerous place. Well, let me tell you, I think the indoors can be just as dangerous as the outdoors. And if anything, a child or a teenager connected to the internet may be in far greater danger than a kid who's playing down the street at the playground. You know, here's the reality. Even though the press has made so much of these horrible and just atrocious, heartbreaking cases of violence against children and all the rest, it's not as if there is an actual spike in the number of these cases. You know, it's not as if the woods are filled with people.
that that are just out to get our children, that the outdoors is a hostile place filled with bugs and viruses and all kinds of things. Oh, they may be there, but that's why parents are called to be parents, put in the right boundaries, put in the right security, but get your kids outdoors. And a child that doesn't know the outdoors is being robbed not only of information that child needs and experiences they need to have, but frankly of an understanding of the world and, of course, of the glory of God in creation. Children need an opportunity to get out in the backyard and encounter bugs. They need to understand what it's like to fall in the grass. They need to know the smells of the grass and the woods. They need to know what it's like to get dirty and the fact that they actually can get clean by taking a bath. They need to understand that the outdoors is a sign to us of how God loves us by giving us the space, the beauty, the grandeur, the diversity of an entire global playground. And it's sad when children have no idea what's in the woods, what's at the beach, what's at the lake. But it's even sadder when they don't have much knowledge of what's in the backyard. Good conversation. Folks, I'm going to be going to Germany and Switzerland in October. As a matter of fact, during the time of Reformation Day, I'm going to be there, and I'd like for you to go with me. October 27th to November 5, 2010, I'm going to be leading a Reformation tour, and it's going to be a spectacular opportunity because we're going to be going to the great places where history happened in terms of the Reformation, and we're going to be going to those places together and able to talk. I'm going to be teaching along the way about what these things mean. And it's going to be a great opportunity. You can find out more about how you can participate in this and join me in this trip by going to the website at www.sbts.edu. That's sbts.edu. And I hope you will join me. I'd love for you to follow me at Twitter, by the way, because I'm always putting up material during the day I think would be of interest to you. Just go to twitter.com, sign up for Albert Mohler. And remember, you can always communicate with us by email and digital media. Back next time for Intelligent Christian Conversation. Thanks for listening to the Albert Mohler Program.
Thanks for listening, and be sure to visit our website, www.albertmohler.com. You'll find archives of past shows and other important resources. You can also email your questions and comments. That's www.albertmohler.com. Be sure to join us next time for the Albert Mohler Program, your place for intelligent Christian conversation about the issues that matter.